Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the We're Having a Good Time podcast. My name's Dusty Slay, and I'm your host, and I'm pumped to be here. I'm alone in a room. This cord right here is dangling. Some guy commented saying that I gotta fix this cord, and I don't know what he wants me to do. I'm not an expert podcast guy. I'm just a talker. I'm not good. I don't understand. He's like, oh, this is too sloppy, and I don't know where it's supposed to go. I like my microphone to hang down a little bit, so I don't know what this guy wants me to do. But you know, they say, the expression I think is, once you start to do something, everybody else tells you how to do it. That can't be how the expression goes. But it's something like that, though. It's like, you know, you get your car fixed, and then people are like, oh, you should have came to me. I would have helped you get it fixed. And then when you go to them, you go, hey, I need my car fixed. They go, why are you telling me? I don't know anything. Or they tell you how to do the podcast. They tell you not to drink water. Don't breathe heavy. You know, and people love to say things. And, you know, I do appreciate a lot of them because a lot of constructive criticism is helpful. And I'm into it. And I'm not upset about anything. Well, there's a lot of things I'm upset about, but not things. I'll tell you what I'm upset about. I just saw a video, and this is about, I've been seeing videos of people talking about it in Memphis, but it's just people saying things, right? But today I saw a video that looked like it was from a documentary. So they were walking around and showing some details, and it's a family, a couple, an older couple. They bought a house about an hour outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and they live out in the country. And Mark Zuckerberg came along and built one of these data centers for AI, and it's basically taken all this family's well water. Their water barely comes out of the sink. And they were way out in the country. Now they have this, and you could see it in their yard. They were sitting in their yard pointing to this giant warehouse data center, all for creating AI. And apparently that's what Elon Musk is doing now in Memphis. It's very bad. I mean, I would say at least in Memphis, you're right next to the Mississippi River, but it probably just means that they're going to taint and destroy the river. I just think it's bad. I was like against AI, and then all of a sudden I was for it. But now I'm learning that it has to do all this cooling. And I think that if you're using AI a little bit, and I'm not just trying to justify myself here, I'm just saying if you're using AI a little bit, you're messing around with it, or you're making some posters, whatnot, you know, you're probably not generating a ton of usage. But people are using it at work, for instance, you know, you're going to be generating a ton of usage. And then when I go on X, it's the most annoying thing I've ever seen. People use this Grok, which Grok is, I guess you can type at Grok, G-R-O-K, and then ask it a question. So a video will be posted, and then people will go, Grok, you know, fill me in on the details of this video. And like one I saw, it was like some sports play, and the question was, you know, should this person be ejected? And then the first comment is like, Grok, tell us more about this, why this person should be ejected. And it's like, it's the very first thing that people do is just go right to Grok. They don't even want to think for themselves. They don't even want to look anything up. They just go right to that and type it in. And it's just so wild that we're like, it's seeming like we're going to lose our drinking water so that we don't have to think anymore. We can just ask AI all our questions. It's very dark. And now I don't know that I think AI is demonic now. I don't know. I'm not saying I don't. But I do think the people setting up these data centers may be a little demonic, because you got to know you're taking people's drinking water. And that's the thing, right? We all feel like we can move to the country and escape the madness. But I see more and more as I'm driving through small towns, you'll be way back and you think, oh, I'm in the middle of nowhere. And then there's just a giant warehouse, some giant Amazon warehouse, or just various undescript warehouses. I mean, it's just, and then, or you'll be in the middle of nowhere and here's some cell phone tower just out there in the sky. And, you know, I don't, you know, let's say that we don't think people are doing anything malicious. Let's just say that we don't think people are doing malicious things, but could there be consequences to living next to a cell phone tower? I'm not even saying they're doing it on purpose. Let's say they're like, hey, we just want you to get good cell service. And who doesn't want good cell service? I mean, I want it. I want to be able to take a call. But what if there are consequences to living next to a cell phone tower? I don't use microwaves. I may go to a restaurant and they put my food in a microwave and I don't know. But I don't use them. We had our kitchen renovated. We're very happy with it. We removed the microwave. We have no microwave in our house. I love that. And I talk to people about it and they go, well, I think microwaves have been around long enough for us to know whether they're going to do any harm to us or not. And then I'm always like, well, everybody is sick. And I'm not blaming the microwaves, but I'm just saying it's not like you can look at society and go, and look how good we're doing. When it's like, no, we're all sick. Everybody has stomach problems. They say that you eat like you eat here. You go to Europe, and I'm not saying Europe's better. I'm just saying this point. You go to Europe and you eat their food. You eat the same way you're eating here, but in the European equivalent, and you feel better. My friend said he went to Germany and drank beer the whole time, and he lost weight. Meanwhile, everybody here is overweight. We all got a little pudge to us. And it's one of the most insane things, I think. And so it's like, so to say, it's like any of these things where, you know, I used to be one of these people that was like, I didn't wear a bike helmet when I was a kid. You know, everybody's weak now because they want to wear bike helmets. You know, stuff like, I was one of those guys. I was one of those, we drank out of the garden hose and now everybody needs bottled water. But I could be doing better, I think. Like in life, I'm having a great time and I feel good, and thankfully my brain works really well, but my stomach doesn't. And when I let my kids ride their little tricycles out in the street out here, I make them wear helmets because I'm like, why? What am I trying to prove out here? I want my kids to be tough. So my son crashes his bike and busts his forehead and cracks his eye socket. And then I'm like, yeah, but he can't see and he don't think that good, but he is tough, baby. He's tough. That's all I'm saying. It's like, I don't, any of the stuff that we did in my generation, like when people go to me and they go, I say, I don't want my kids eating that. And they go, well, you ate it growing up and you're fine. I go, I'm not fine. I did eat it growing up. I'm not fine. And ingredients are different. The name of the food may be the same, but the ingredients are different. I watched the movie Founder a long time ago. It's a movie about McDonald's and Ray Kroc, played by Michael Keaton. Great movie. I mean, I'll watch anything that Michael Keaton is in. Michael Keaton may be my favorite of all time. I mean, he's great. I think favorite of all times too much, but he is great. I really like Michael Keaton. And in this movie, they are, Ray Kroc has kind of come in and taken over these guys' business, basically. He's helping them in a way, but he's taking advantage of them. And they just want, they just, in the movie, they say, we just want a good restaurant that serves good quality food. And they have these giant freezers where they keep all this ice cream because they make Frosties or whatever kind of thing that McDonald's makes. And Ray Kroc is trying to cut expenses as they start to expand their restaurants. And he's saying, a big problem, a big part of our cost is coming with these freezers. We have to build these freezers. We have to run these freezers. And it's too much. So he had a lady, he met with a lady, and she had a powder that you could pour into water and stir it up a few times, and it would taste just like the Frosties they were already making. And, you know, they went with that because it cost so much less and tasted the same. And the average consumer doesn't ask questions about what's in there. They you know, you can get ice cream. I've gotten it before, and I've eaten it, and I like it. Is it as good as Ben and Jerry's? I don't know. It's debatable, but it's still very good. It was like raw milk sweetened with honey and, you know, had a couple other things in it, but all regular ingredients, no crazy stuff, maybe vanilla. And then so you can have ice cream, and I wouldn't say that's healthy for me, but it's not like just awful for me. And so, you know, you could go get a smoothie or whatever you call it at McDonald's, and it tastes really good, and it's not that bad for you. Or you could get some weird chemical powder that you have no idea what it does to your body. And it is just like, I don't understand. I just don't understand. When I talk about these things with certain people, they just act like I'm a nutcase because I just want to eat healthy food. And then I get and I talked about this last week, I know. And I'm in on the joke. But I get criticized for cigars, and I'm like, I just don't think that cigars are that bad for you. Are they great? No, probably not. But I don't think they're that bad. But I'm also not oblivious to the fact that there could be harms to them. I don't, when somebody says, oh, those are bad for you, I don't act like, are you crazy? Cigars have been around since the beginning of time, and we're all doing fine. I don't think we're all doing fine. I don't think a lot of people's brains work that well. I read comments on X all the time and on threads. It's one of my favorite things is to see a post and then go down to the comments and see how many ways people can argue with each other about it. I love doing it. It's unbelievable. And I'll see comments sometimes and I think, well, no, there's no way somebody can argue with that. That is a great point that they just made. And there is an argument. There's an argument between many people. I think a lot of them are bots. I think a lot of that is happening. I don't even know how real the internet is anymore. It's like, I watched a video one time and they were talking about how you go to Google and you look up something and it'll say there's 100,000 results. And then you just keep scrolling and keep scrolling. And eventually you reach the end and you've gotten nowhere near 100,000 results. You've gotten, you know, maybe 1,000, nowhere near 100,000. And these are numbers I'm just pulling out of the air. But the idea is that it's much lower than what they're saying. And so many things. I think so many people that comment on stuff are just bots. I mean, they do it on my posts. I get it all the time. I got a lot of fake accounts of me. And then people comment. Somebody will come into my feed and they'll go, hey, great show last night. And then there'll be a comment by some weird Dusty Slay private chat group. And it'll be like, hey, dear friend, your loyalty to me as a fan means so much. And I'm just so blessed. I would love it if you would DM me your home address and social security number. And most people don't fall for it, and that's great. But I never will refer to someone as dear friend unless I'm joking or I'm at a funeral and I've had to give a speech. But even then, I don't know. I might say this is a hot funeral. But it's just so crazy. There is so much going on. There's plenty to be upset about. But, you know, for the most part, life is good. I feel good. I just want to be vigilant out here about, and food, you know, I just read things. I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not true. I just read things and I think about it and I go, yeah, that makes sense. If we believe evil people are running the world, then this makes sense. But, you know, it's like inorganic food cost less than organic food. And what they say is the inorganic GMO world is subsidized by the government. Meanwhile, if you grow organic food, you have so many hoops to jump through and so many different things to pay that it ends up costing more. And I just think organic should be the norm. Our government should subsidize organic. And I want, you know, small farms, which is, you know, a thing of the past. It's not coming back. But, you know, small farms where we can all raise our own food and guarantee that, you know, we're just not going to have giant data centers soaking up all the water. I mean, that's the scariest thing I've seen in a long time. I mean, just imagine, and that's what they're saying is happening in Memphis. But just imagine, you're just living somewhere, you're living your life, you're going to work every day. Maybe you've just finally bought your dream home out in the country. And then, boom, here comes a giant data center that's soaking up all your water. I mean, we have to have water. I think the owner of Nestle, the CEO of Nestle, at least at some point, who knows who's running it now, but I think that was who it was, said that, you know, water is not a human right, that we should have to buy our water. I think water should be free. Now, I say that, but at the same time, it's like when things are free, people get really wasteful, right? Like if water was free, people would just water their grass all day, every day. You know, I yell at my kids for keep turning the hose on and filling up their little blue plastic pool out here because I'm like, you're wasting all the water. Every day you fill the thing up, then you dump the water out, you're wasting the water. And I yell at them. And I don't like waste in general, but I also have to pay for the water. So I just think that's one of the scary, and I'm not even trying to scare people. It's like, you know, the world's falling apart. But I think that's one of the scariest things I've seen in a long time. And I'm just like, wow. And my TikTok, maybe it's because I live in Tennessee, but my TikTok is filled with people talking about Memphis and what's going on with that whole water situation. And then I think Hannah was saying that we live very close to Percy Priest Lake, not on the lake, but, you know, close, fairly close to it. And she was saying that she read that it's like the most polluted body of water. And I believe it. I mean, I see people swimming out there and I feel bad for them. I'm like, do not swim out there. And I say all that. And then I want to say this. I often reminisce. Now, this could be an age thing, but let me just say it. I often reminisce about times before the internet, the 90s, the early 2000s. And I think about how great they were and how, you know, oh, everything was great back then. And I found a journal of mine. I didn't find it. I knew where it was at. I pulled it out because I used to write a lot of poems. And so I wanted to turn those poems into songs using AI. And I have done one of them like that. And I think it's pretty good. You know, it's soulless, obviously. But this is what I thought for my musician friends out there that got upset with me about this. What I'd like to be able to do is create some kind of demo using AI so I could say, hey, this is what I'm trying to create here, and then have real human beings do it better. That's what I'd like to do. Ooh, I want to talk about this. I'm going to try to remember. Let me try to write it down. So I was reading through those, and particularly in 2003. In 2003, I was 21. It's the year I turned 21, and it is the year I moved to Charleston. But the first half of 2003, and I know I haven't gotten to the second half yet, but man, I was sad. I was mad. I was unhappy with my life. And I know that was the last, because I moved in August. So that was the last 9 months that I lived in Opelika. And man, was I upset. I had been living in a trailer that I bought my childhood trailer back, and I had been living there, and I had gotten arrested, and I had no driver's license for 9 months, and I was working at Office Depot, making very much money, pretty unhappy with my whole girlfriend situation, and, you know, just, I was just so unhappy, and maybe, and there's a good chance, this is a very good chance, that the only, because I didn't write in this book every day. There's a very good chance that I only wrote in this book when I was sad, or mad. So maybe it wasn't every day, but I wrote a lot of things in there. And I wrote things about people specifically. I was very troubled for a while. And I would write things in there about people, and I would say, I just want to remember this. I don't want to forget that I felt this way. And there were a couple of, you know, because I've always been a Christian, but I've been through various struggles with things. And I wrote about two particular religious leaders in the community that I knew, and people that I think about now, and I think, wow, they really helped me and I really like them. And I wrote a note in there about those two guys to say, that they turn their backs on people when they need help. And I was like, I don't even remember what I was so mad about, but I was shocked to find that I had read that in there, that I had written that in there. So I say all that to say, it's like the Paul Simon song, Kodachrome. He says, he starts off, when I think back on all the girls I knew in high school, when I think back on all, I can't remember it. I wish I could play it, but now I'm putting it on the internet, and so I'm, I get flagged. I'm having to change my opening song on the YouTube video because it keeps getting flagged. We get it cleared, but it gets flagged every time, so we're gonna, we're going to switch that up, but I will keep it on the regular one. All right, I'm going to go. Here we go. This is the Kodachrome lyrics. This is verse 2 is what I quote a lot. Obviously not recently because I've forgotten it. He says, "If you took all the girls I knew when I was single and brought them all together for one night, I know they'd never match my sweet imagination, and everything looks worse in black and white." And I just think it's so true. We only, when, at least me, when I think about the past, I only remember the good times. And I think, oh man, wasn't it great? I mean, I think about the time I lived on Folly Beach in 2005. And I just think, man, that was, those were the days, man, just cruising around, you know, driving down Folly Beach, hanging out on the water. But I was sad. I was drinking a lot. I was lonely. I was getting hammered. Sure, I was having some good times, for sure. But I was also sad a lot of those times. And, you know, and one of those things is that the internet wasn't so prominent back then. I remember I had a MySpace when I lived on Folly Beach, but things weren't so prominent that, you know, we weren't connected on social media. So, you know, I was just lonely. There was not this connectivity that we have now. Sorry, Hannah came in here to get a phone charger, and it really threw my whole train of thought there. I had a wild train of thought going, and I don't even know how long I've been going now. But, so, I say that just to mean, like, just because you think the past was better doesn't mean it was better. But it also doesn't mean that the future is better. And the future does not look better. I feel like we've hit peak technology to where it's like, do we really need more technology? I mean, what at this point, how enhanced could it be? It's like, sure, I have been able to take a poem that I wrote in 2003, put it into AI, bring it to life in this 22-year-old poem now has life to it. And that's real cool. But does it mean anything? I don't think so. I don't think the poem means anything. I'm just talking about how angry I am all the time. And that was when I was 21. So it's like, I was also thinking, like, you know, I say we're having a good time a lot now. I'm always like, we're having a good time. And the whole, and I know I've said this several times now, but the whole point of we're having a good time was to, you know, you say that when you're not necessarily having a good time. And, you know, you're like, hey, but we're having a good time. Because, you know, deep down, you're like, life is good, right? Things are bad. Things happen. And you're like, but life is good. So, but I feel like that gets me, I almost get pigeonholed into this guy who's just having fun all the time. Not a complaint in the world, just having fun. And then I read back on this journal that I kept in 2003 and I go, oh no, I've been complaining my whole dang life. I've been complaining, I've been mad, I've been this and that. You know, my dad is a very mad guy, and probably my grandfather was mad too. I got a long line of mad people. I mean, my grandfather used to have to plow a field with a mule and a hand plow. I can't imagine he was just joyful all the time, but maybe he was. I mean, maybe he was just connected to the earth. Maybe he got up in the morning, had a cup of coffee, and went out and plowed the field and didn't have to talk to anybody, probably didn't have high taxes, and he just, you know, he just worked and ate food. But he died at 66, so I don't know. Who knows? It's, yeah, it's just wild out here, and I hate to see these giant warehouses like this going up because they put them in parts of the country and then people make videos about it, they talk about it, they put it out there, but nobody really cares. It's just like the microwave thing. It's like, if you bring it up, you must be some kind of conspiracy theorist. I've gotten some comments, but I don't know if I saved any of them. But there was a comment that I read the other day, and I don't know if it was email or not, and he said, I think conspiracies are just something to help people sell books. And I thought to myself, after I replied to him, I thought, you might say that's a conspiracy in itself. I just think it's so funny when people don't believe, they're like, I don't believe in conspiracies. It's like, you don't believe that there's ever been powerful people that got together and tried to pull off an agenda without other people knowing about it? You don't believe that that ever happened? Because if you say no, you don't believe it, then you're a liar. And if you say yes, that you do believe it, then you do believe in conspiracies to some degree. Conspiracy theory, I'm told, was made up by some organization to demonize people who question authority. And we all should question authority. We should question all authority figures. I mean, when you were in high school, your teachers were authority figures to you. Are you saying that no teacher ever taught you anything that was incorrect? I mean, I have thought about so many things that I learned in school that I think back on now and I think is really dumb. And that's a good, another verse one from Paul Simon's Kodachrome. When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And though my lack of education hasn't hurt me none, I can read the writing on the wall. And I can't begin to speak for what Paul Simon might have been thinking about there, but to me it's like, yeah, I might not be the most schooled person, but I can think well enough to see what's going on. And even though I may not be right on all the facts and this and that, it's like you can still get her a general idea and go, I don't like the way this is going. And even though I can't prove it, I don't believe you. And that's how I am. That's just what I think about things. I go, no, that doesn't add up. I can't prove it. And I'm not even going to try to prove it. But it doesn't add up to me. And I don't believe it. All right, on to some different things. I don't know how long this has been going now because I had to cut it off and I forgot to note the time. But I want to talk about this. I watched the Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown, and I really liked it. I didn't think I would like it, and I had already told myself that I was not going to watch it. But this weekend, I worked with my friend, Will O'Donnell. We did, I'd like to talk about where I've been, but we went out to California and did some shows. And Will is a big Bob Dylan fan. I used to be a big Bob Dylan fan. And I still am of the old song. Blood on the Tracks is a really, really great album. I liked disc one of the Essential Bob Dylan. I think the setting has to be right. I listened to it in the car with my wife, and I don't think she was into it. And it, as a byproduct, it hurt the way I listened to it. But these songs mean something to me, and I've probably talked about everything that I can talk about in my life. So I'll repeat myself. But the Essential Bob Dylan, I mean, that song, that album meant something to me. And I know that, you know, Essentials, Greatest Hits, you know, those are not albums. Those are just compilations. Blowing in the Wind, obviously, is a really great song. But this song, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. I mean, I was, you know, too emotional. I was raised by women. My dad was around, and I'm not making statements on women. I'm just telling you about my life. My dad was always in the picture. My parents are divorced, and I basically lived in a two-bedroom trailer with my mom and my two older sisters, my oldest sister being 11 years older than me and my other sister being 9 years older than me, and that's who I grew up with. And then I would go to my dad's house every other weekend where I had two older stepbrothers. But I spent most of the time with women watching, you know, Grease, listening to Bon Jovi and Poison and country music. But so I can tend to get a little emotional about movies and songs. And that's another theory that I have is that I don't think that our emotions are supposed to be manipulated like this. I think that we have sadness and happiness and we have all these different emotions that are natural, God-given emotions, and they're supposed to come out of us at appropriate times. Like in our lives, if a relative dies, that's when we experience sadness. But yet we can experience sadness multiple times a day if we watch the right movies. I mean, there are movies that make me cry. Now, I'm not boo-hooing, but a little tear will fall out of my eye. And I think that that is, you know, we shouldn't be manipulating ourselves like that. But Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. I worked with this girl, and man, I this is what I did. I joined the Army, and then I bought a Bob Dylan CD. I had a little money saved and I was just blowing all my money because I knew I was about to go to the Army. So I didn't care anymore. I was just blowing money. And I bought this Bob Dylan $30 two-disc set and I was just listening to it. And this Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. I mean, I made that up in my mind that this was the song for me and this girl. And, you know, I always beat around the bush trying to ask her out. And I think she probably would have gone out with me had I just, you know, asked her. But I didn't really have people around me teaching me those kinds of things. It wasn't until I worked with Stu Barber at Spectracide many years later that he would actually teach me how to go on a date and how to, you know, actually convince a woman to date me. Those are not the right words, but you know, I just, you know, I was always, you know, just beating around the bush about stuff, and you go on a date and then you wait 2 days and then you call and you blah, blah, blah. I mean, Stu taught me the way. I'm not going to give the secrets away, but Stu taught me the way. And, but one of those ways is, you know, first off, Stu was not teaching me to be a pickup artist. He was teaching me how to go on a date with a girl that I liked and get her to date me, with, you know, without, you know, the methods I was choosing. And so, and one of those ways is to just be direct. You go on the date, you have fun, you and you try to have a good date. You don't just, you know, you don't just go to a movie. This was back in the day, this is what I did. A couple of times I did this with some longer-term girlfriends. I never had too long of girlfriends, but when I drank, this is be my first girlfriend that I had in Charleston, my first official girlfriend. I dated a little bit, I messed around, but a first official girlfriend, I really liked her. And so I asked her out to a comedy show. So we went out and we got food, couple of drinks, and then we went to a comedy show and we laughed and we had a good time. And then another time we went out to dinner. We went to a really nice dinner, and then we went to Folly Beach and drank at a buddy of mine's place. And these were good dates, but you know, it's like, you know, but this, and then when I didn't drink, I did the same thing, dinner and a comedy show. I think those are really good because you laugh together, you have a good time together. Movies, not so much. I feel like you're just sitting there watching a thing. I've done that too, but you got to work with what you got. Not everybody's got a comedy club, but once you see that you've had a good date, you know, you just be direct. You go, I have really had a good time, and I would like to go out with you again. And you don't try to go for the kiss too early. I think nowadays everybody's just, you know, they're just banging on the first date. But I think if you're, because to me, it was always like this, right? If you just go out with a girl and you really want to date the girl, and you really, it's like you move slowly. This is not good biblical advice, by the way. I'm just talking as a general American out here. You know, if you go all the way, right away, like what else is there, right? You like the tension of the next step, you know? You go on a couple of dates, and then you go on one and you kiss, and then you go on another and you do a little something, you do a little something, you do a little something, and it's like, you're like, it's exciting for both of you, and you're not rushing into anything and you're getting to know each other. I know people that have done it the biblical way, and I admire it, and you know, oftentimes I think about my life and I go, man, I wish I had been more like that, but it really was not how I was raised. But I know a couple, and I know a couple of couples, matter of fact, that got married. They never kissed before they got married. They never did anything before they got married. And that's the way. And both of those couples that I know that are like that, and I may know more people like that, but I know two couples in particular, and their relationships are going strong and have been for a long time. And they have beautiful families. And I think it's awesome. People make fun of that biblical path of saving yourself for marriage like it's unattainable. I most certainly didn't do that. And I wish that I had, though. But it was just not in my, not even in my realm of thinking. That was not what the men around me were teaching. What we were kind of being taught was, do it as much as you can, because when you get married, it'll only be with one person. And I'm like, that's the most backwards thinking that I've ever heard. But, you know, that is how I was raised. So, and I'm not saying my parents were giving me that advice, but they were not giving me other advice. And so as a byproduct, other people were coming into the world, into my world, giving me advice. All right, so back to Bob Dylan. So this Don't Think Twice, It's All Right really meant a lot to me. I mean, I thought about this girl with this song. Now, that memory is long since gone in an emotional sense. Sure, I still can think about it, but that is gone. The times, they are a-changing. Wow. I was in 2003, 2002, 2000 to 2003 when I was still living in Opelika but out of high school and was real angsty. I was just so mad, just unsatisfied. I had spent all this time in high school and I finally graduated and then I just felt like there was nothing. I was just like, what is life? Like, what am I to do? I'm just to go to work every day and then come home and smoke weed and play video games and drink and try to get laid. I mean, that's life. Sure, those things are fun for a time. But I'm just like, is this what my life is? And I was just so unhappy. At some point, I did accept that that's what life is. And I became happier because I accepted it. But, you know, and then I found something else. It Ain't Me, Babe, great song. I never really liked Maggie's Farm. Mr. Tambourine Man, obviously good. Like a Rolling Stone, great. Yeah, I mean, this whole first CD, Disc 1, and if you look on Spotify, Essential Bob Dylan, Disc 1, it doesn't break it apart into two discs, but Disc 1 ends at I'll Be Your Baby Tonight, because Disc 2 started with Lay Lady Lay, which is a good song. But I watched this Bob Dylan documentary, and I'm not going to ruin it. It's not a documentary, this movie. I'm not going to ruin it for you. Is it a perfect movie? No. It feels like they're trying to make everything an emotional changing moment where everybody is just looking on going, can you believe this is happening right now? But it is really good. And what they say about Bob Dylan is if you go see him now or any time in the last 20 years, he won't play any of his old songs. He won't play any of the stuff that people, really know him for. But you see that happening in this movie where even early on, he's like, once he's written something and put it on an album, he doesn't really want to play it because he's like, you can listen to that at home. Even though people would boo and they wanted to hear those songs, you just saw that Bob Dylan was gonna do it his own way. Now, again, I don't know if this is reality, but I know this is the character they portrayed in the movie. And I just loved it so much because I'm not saying I'm Bob Dylan. I never would make some silly statement like that. But I've always admired people who just do their things their own way. And that's what I want to do. And sometimes you upset people when you do it your way and you don't listen to the advice they give you. And I do listen to advice, you know, but sometimes I'm like, that's good advice what you're giving me, but that ain't the way I want to do it. That's how I felt. I moved twice, and both times the advice I was given by people around me was, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't move. I've quit jobs where they go, that's a good job. I wouldn't quit that job or anything. And I go, nah, I got to do it. I got to do it. And then you just do it. And it feels good. And I just want to do things my way. I'm not like these days, I try to be careful and measured and I try to not blow up at people and really tell people what's on my mind. But I am like, I almost close up when people are telling me I have to do something that I don't want to do or if I get locked into doing something that I don't want to do anymore, but people are like, oh, you got to keep doing it though. This is good for you. This is good for your career. Like selling tickets, I'm on a theater tour. Sometimes I go to a theater and it sells great. Sometimes it sells out and we go, boom, we're on the way. We made it. And then other times it's a third full and people are like, what happened? And I'm like, I don't know. People didn't want to buy tickets to the show. I'm okay with it. People, you come see me if you want to come see me. I don't. It's like when I was in New York City, that show didn't sell particularly well. It sold great for me, right? I've never done my own show in New York City. I sold 500 tickets. I'm like, that's amazing. A trailer park boy from Opelika, Alabama, selling 500 tickets in New York City to see me tell jokes about dip. That's amazing. But it was a much bigger theater than 500 seats, so it doesn't look too good. So I reached out to several people. I don't do this sort of thing a lot, but I know a few comics in New York City that are pretty popular, and I reached out to them and asked would they share my poster on their social media, and they did, and they were all very nice. They all did it. But I don't think it made an impact. So I feel like I'm done doing that. Because it's like, hey, if people are going to come, they're going to come. But I'm not begging people to come. I will still do promo, but I just, I don't know. I just love the movie. And I didn't even think about the movie at the time. I wasn't even thinking about how this movie is inspiring me, but it was. It just, as the days went on, I continued to think about it. And I'm like, this is a really good movie. There were certain aspects I didn't like. But overall, I really liked it. And I thought they kind of shoehorned some names in there for some kind of impact. You're like, ooh, I recognize that name. I had no idea. In a movie, you gotta move through. You can't just focus on anything too long. I wish they'd have a little Charlie Daniels in there. Charlie Daniels tells a story about how he was a session musician and he got to play on some of Bob Dylan's songs when he was recording. And after half a day, Charlie Daniels was like, I was only scheduled to be there half a day. And then another guy would come in. And then he said, he was like, as I got up to leave, Bob Dylan was like, where's Charlie going? And they were like, oh, Charlie's only here half the day. We got another guy for you later. And he's like, I don't want another guy. I want Charlie. And Charlie Daniels talks about how that always meant a lot to him and had a big impact on him. And I would have loved to see that. That wasn't in there. I would just loved. And I know that's more of a, it's probably more of a Charlie Daniels movie that we'll probably never get. But I thought it was great. All right. So I recommend it. I recommend watching that movie. And I recommend listening to the albums Blood on the Tracks by Bob Dylan and Disc 1 of The Essential Bob Dylan. And everybody is going to listen to... Free Will and Bob Dylan's got some good stuff on it. Girl from the North Country. There's a duet with him and Johnny Cash, which is really, really good. But Free Will and Bob Dylan, Girl from the North Country is on there. Just Bob Dylan. And I think it's really good. And another one I really like is Highway 61 Revisited. I really like that one. That's got a lot of good stuff on it. I think that's one of his most popular ones. But anyway, great stuff. All right, so this is where I was at this weekend. I don't know what I'm talking about. I hope this podcast has been good. I think that's on the bingo card. I really liked doing that last week, by the way, the bingo card. I am not going to be on Nateland for... I don't know. I'm not on there. As you see, yesterday I wasn't on there because they filmed on a different day. And then I'm going to be, next week, I'm going to go to Alabama for a few days. So likely I won't be on next week either. But I'm not gone. I just, you know, it's like with Nate filming the movie and stuff like that, various things are happening. So when they switch up days, it's hard for us with the kids. So, you know, so I can't do a lot of day switching. Because I'm already gone so much that it's like, I don't know. It's just hard. So when they switch days, I can't do it. This past weekend, and I'm also taking time off from the road. I may pop in at Zany's on some Monday nights. My next Zany's show is on June 24th, but I'm taking time off from the road because I just want a break. The road wears me out, and I don't even go out that much anymore. I go out every weekend, but I'm not gone quite as much as I used to be, but it just wears me out. And I just want to be home with my family. I want to spend some time with them and give my wife a break to where she's not just with the kids all the time. And this is a good example. This past weekend is a bit more extreme than what I normally do, but I flew out, had to leave here. I couldn't find a direct flight. But I flew out from here and I connected in Phoenix and then I flew on to San Jose, California. And then I rented a car and I drove another 2 hours to Modesto, California. And I did a show there, me and Will O'Donnell, and it was great. We had a lot of fun. And then we hung out outside of the hotel, had a couple of cigars, and just talked, got caught up. We not hung out in a long time. I've talked about Will before, but Will is a comic out of St. Louis, and we're the same age. And Will, at the age that I joined the Army, got arrested and didn't go in, Will joined the Marines and did go in. And Will had a kid at 19, and then another, I think, at 21. So now his daughters are both grown and I'm just getting started and he's just getting started in comedy, not just getting, but he's a few years in, whereas I've been doing it for a really long time. So, we're kind of like living each other's lives in reverse, but we both really enjoy complaining about things. So it's fun. I mean, we're both generally unhappy about everything happening. And also fully aware that our complaints are ridiculous. But it's fun. So we had a good time. And then the next day we had to drive 3 hours to Bakersfield. But we stopped in Turlock, California. I have a friend that lives in Turlock, sort of a friend. We've become friendly. He is a... owns some farms, and he owns a record label in Nashville. And I met him at the Grand Ole Opry, and I did a couple of gigs for him. And we become friendly, and so we had lunch together in Turlock. Very nice guy, ton of fun. And then we went on down to Bakersfield. And that was a three-hour drive, and a fairly boring drive. Heavy traffic, boring drive. And then we get to Bakersfield, and it's 99 degrees. But the great thing about the weather there, and listen, I've got jokes, I got various things talking about how much I love the humid heat. And I do love it. I do love it. I love the South, and I love the weather. But it was 99 degrees, and I sat in the shade and had a cigar. I had a half a cigar left from the night before, so I just puffed on it a little bit. But I would never dream of having a cigar outside in 99-degree southern heat. Are you kidding me? That feels like death. 99-degree southern heat smoking? Are you kidding me? So then I did my show in Bakersfield, and it was my... As far as my theater tour goes, this was my lightest attended show. that I've had so far. And everybody told me, now I was standing on stage and I said, you know, people always make excuses for you when shows don't sell well. Like you go, people would be here, but the weather's just so nice that everybody just wants to be outside. They don't want to buy tickets and come to a show. They just want to be outside. And then if the weather's bad, they're like, nobody wants to get out in this weather. Or if you're in the South and they're like, you know, you're doing a show and they're like, well, football's back, you know. Nobody in the South wants to come out during football season. And I'm like, yeah, it's Friday, though. This is not Saturday. And they go, yeah, high school football. Everybody here loves high school football. And then somebody yelled out, graduation. And I'm like, yeah, any excuse to not come see the show. And then I got email from it, and I got several other messages, and then people told me that it was graduation for, like, the whole city of Bakersfield. And other people were like, you've come to Bakersfield at the worst possible time. But I'm going to tell you, I had so much fun at that show. I did an hour and 27 minutes on stage by myself. That's my longest time. That's the longest amount of time I've done yet. And I don't go that long if it feels like I'm forcing it. But it just felt like it was really fun. It felt like we were having a great time. And I really liked Bakersfield. I hung out a bit. I enjoyed it. And then the next day, I had to drive 4 hours. So here we are. One day I'm flying across the country driving 2 hours. Next day I'm driving 3 hours. Next day I'm driving 4 hours back to San Jose, where we had a show that night. It was the biggest show of the weekend. It was very good. I had a ton of fun. I think San Jose is a super cool city. We did the show. We hung out. Had another guy named Phil Johnson on the show, which I still think is a fake name. Most people don't get the joke, but his name is Phil Johnson. Even my friend goes, why would you think that's fake? And I had to break it down a little bit, but I just think that's funny. Phil Johnson, that's your name? Phil. But anyway, Phil's a very nice guy, very funny comic, and I met him doing a casino a while back, so I asked him to come do the show with us, and then we hung out and talked. Phil's great. Really enjoy that guy. When I was leaving, and then I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning to leave to go to the airport and drop off the rental car. And man, San Jose, pretty sketchy around 4:30 a.m., especially when you have to fill up your rental car at a gas station. I think all airports should have mandatory gas stations so you can fill up your car, fill up your rental car. That's what I think. Mandatory gas stations, and you can't raise the price. Speaking of gas prices, I want to tell you this. In Nashville right now, it is $2.69 per gallon for gas. And when you get 18 gallons, that's $48.42. Okay? I filled up my rental car and I put in 18 gallons into the rental car in California, and it cost me $98. Gas is so expensive in California. And what I'm being told, I have no idea, but this is what I'm being told, that the state government, the state of California, taxes gas by like 40%. And I don't know if that's true, but all I'm saying is if that is true, California is gigantic. It is such a huge state. And it's a driving state. I mean, you live in LA, you drive everywhere. There's hardly no way to get around without driving. Not a way that I know about. So everybody that lives in California is driving, and every gallon of gas they put in their car is 40 cents higher. You get 40 cents for every dollar that people put into their tank. That's wild. That state should have no problems with homelessness. It's so crazy. I love California. I do love it so much. I think it's a beautiful state. I think once you get out of the cities, it can turn into the country really fast. You could be in Alabama. You could be in Iowa once you get out of the cities. Or you could be in the mountains. You could be on the beach. And you could be in the city. And they have some very nice cities. San Francisco gets trashed a lot. And I hear there are some very bad spots. And I've not been there in a long time. But when I was there in 2019, I really liked it. I enjoyed the city. And there's parts of LA that I like. San Diego is a very nice city. So it's like there are these nice cities. It's a wonderful state, but it's so expensive. It is just unreal what it costs to live there. And I'm happy to be in Tennessee. I love Tennessee. I think it's a cheap state to live. I hope that the Elon Musk AI center gets moved from Memphis, probably will not, and I hope they don't bring any more. I hope the one gets moved from Georgia. I'm not into it. I would gladly give up using AI to know those things went away. But I don't think we're going to be going backwards. And I don't want to go too far back, as I've said. I think I was very unhappy pre-internet days. Now, a lot of different things happened. I became a comic, and I found a job that I liked, and I found a job that helped to give me confidence. I quit drinking. Drinking was a really big thing that was dragging me down, because not only would I be hungover and just physically not feel good, but also mentally, I just was depressed. Nobody was using depressed back when I was drinking. So only a few people. So I didn't never say I'm depressed, but I was like sad. I mean, oh man, I would get so sad sometimes when I was hungover. And then, you know, the way to cure that is to just drink a little bit more. And that's where it gets dark. That's where you get into the spiral. But I rarely did that. I would wake up hungover, go to work, and then get off work and drink again. But I didn't really drink a lot before work. Now, when I was, I don't know, let's say maybe 2008, no, maybe 2007. I'm going to say that. 2007, I would get off work at Spectracide on a Monday, and I had a shift at Hyman's, and sometimes in between shifts, I would get high, and then I would get too high, and then I would do shots so that I would be less high, and so stupid. And also, that girl that I said, the first official girlfriend I had, we had a really weird date at my house one time. I don't know that I've ever talked about this, but me and her, she came over. We had a really great date on Friday. And then on Sunday, I invited her over to my house. And my friend was there, my roommate, and he came and she smoked weed. I smoked weed, and my roommate did. He rolled a blunt for us, and we all smoked this blunt on the couch. And then we got so high. I was uncomfortable high. I didn't realize she was uncomfortable high. And then we watched a movie, and I had rented the movie Apocalypto, a Mel Gibson-directed movie. And it was, it's an intense movie. And it just, we watched the whole thing. We were still high. I was so uncomfortable. I'll take you home. And we got in the car. I was driving a 1982 Buick LeSabre, real big car. And I was so embarrassed of the car. Now, I picked her up in the car. But now I'm so high that I'm so embarrassed of the car. I drop her off. And then I went to a coffee shop and I wrote, you know, I thought I was writing jokes, but I wrote half a book, I think, about my life and my childhood. And I don't know why I was doing that. I just, in that moment, I felt so depressed because I worked so hard to make this girl my girlfriend. And I thought I just ruined it. And then I'd never called her that night. I never even thought about calling her. I never came out of that funk that I was in. The next morning I got up, I went to work, and then I came home from Spectracide, and I had a shift that night at Hyman's. So I was doing shots at home because I knew it was going to be so uncomfortable when I got to work today and I saw that girl. And we immediately talked, and it was fine. And then we dated for a couple of years. So that's that story. But gosh, I often say, I go, do I even like weed anymore? But the real question is, did I ever like it? You know what I mean? Well, listen, I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Like it, share it, subscribe to it if you're on YouTube. I mean to say that at the beginning of these every time, but I forget. But like, share, subscribe. I appreciate you guys listening to this. You guys are the best. So far, I've launched on YouTube, and I'm very happy with how it's going. I think I'm getting good views, which is a worry, right? Because when you're putting out an audio podcast, I don't really care about the numbers because no one sees them, right? I care in the sense that I want to make sure people are listening, but no one sees the numbers. But when you post on YouTube, it becomes public. So I want, you know, there to be views, and the engagement helps. People commenting, people saying that, even if you want to comment negatively. Look, sometimes I'll come in a little snarky or whatever, but you're all entitled to your opinion, and I don't mind you leaving it on there. I may get mad at you, but that's okay. I'm also entitled to get mad. But you guys are great. I appreciate you. I appreciate everybody that comes to my shows. I appreciate all the support. This is a dream come true to be able to do this sort of job. And I am committed to bringing you ad-free podcast for the foreseeable future. And I want a podcast that you can sleep to, a podcast that you cannot have to listen to ads. You know, get a Bible, read your Bibles. Thank you guys for having a good time.